Husker Doc Talk Podcast, number 4. It is game week, finally. Now the big question to answer this week is, how bad of an ass-kicking will it be on Saturday in Lincoln?
Good. I thought you were going to say the question's going to be, so who are they playing?
Good to have you along for another Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by our good friends at the Remington Trophy. Supported by the Benson Brewery. I'm Travis Justice. He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. What's up, Doc?
I'm drinking beer.
You are drinking beer. And tonight we start the podcast of Game Week with a Benson Brewery stunt double. We've got 64 ounces on hand. We're going to go through all 64 ounces tonight. Thanks to our good friends at the Benson Brewery for their support of the Doc Talk Podcast. It is a good way to start game week with a beer.
I wasn't sure if going through all 64 ounces was like a brewery euphemism, or is that like a broadcast term?
No,
we're covering everything.
I've got 64 ounces of freaking beer. We're going to drink it, right?
Well, we probably should. But I think it would be insulting to the Benson Brewery if we didn't.
That's right. It would be insulting. We have to drink their beer. And that brings up a big question that's been brought about in college football this last week, is beer in the stadium. You know, a lot of smaller schools that are not, you know, BCS worthy of the Major Five are considering more beer sales to help raise money. Do you think beer sales inside Memorial Stadium, yes, Tom Osborne, we just said it, would be a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, I'm trying not to come across as elitist here when I say this.
You elitist prick.
I kind of am, but I don't think you should do it in the general stadium.
Why?
I think it's too many people, and I think it can be too hard to control. I think if you did it club seating, box seating, that kind of thing, I think it'd be okay.
So the privileged shall drink of the cup, the unwashed shall have Aquafina.
Exactly. Well, and you know what? And the thing is, it's not a privileged thing. It's you've got a group of people that are somewhat more contained and controllable than the remainder of the
stadium.
What
if I were to tell you that West Virginia has been serving alcohol in its stadium since, I believe, 2011 now? The number of alcohol-related arrests in and around the stadium have decreased since they allowed beer sales to the general public, because they are now, they don't let you go outside at halftime. If you leave the stadium, you're out. You don't get to come back in. So you drink inside the stadium, and that's where it's contained to. And I would say that most people would drink less during a tailgate. They'd probably have less beers if you had it, if you said, because nobody wants to wait in line. I don't think you'd have as many problems as you think. If you can do it in an NFL stadium, you can do it in a college stadium. And if all of a sudden you're going to start paying these players.
Well, look at an NFL stadium. You got Philadelphia and the Raiders, where they burn people in effigy in the stadium.
That's part of the Raider lore, right?
Yeah, Philly too. You know, I guess I'm kind of basing my experience to a degree. And this is a very personalized, very small sample size example, but I mean, I'm thinking about when I went to go play at Colorado when I was in college.
That was great. They had beer in the press box, Rob. While you guys were down playing, they had Coors Light waiting for us in the press box.
While we had beer cans and whiskey bottles ricocheting off of our helmets on the sideline, were up in the press box drinking.
I was toasting. I was going, hey,
hurry
up.
Oh my gosh. And you know, that was one of those things where from people I talked with, that was a one or two game a year occurrence, and it was always a situation where it was the one big crazy game. And you know, I think it's one of those things that if you're selling the beer and it's in the white flimsy plastic cups, truthfully, I think you're okay. I think the problem arises when you give somebody that they can drink and then throw the container. I think that's where the problem comes in.
Of course, we're talking about the home opener this week against Florida Atlantic, but I got to thank the Remington Trophy for the presentation of the Doc Talk Podcast. And there's something really cool going to be going on in Lincoln leading up to the McNeese State game. I want to jump ahead real quick to talk about this, because this is a very important fundraiser for the Boomer Esiason Foundation. The Remington Trophy, as the Single Barrel is teaming up with the Boomer Esiason Foundation, the Remington Trophy, for a little fundraiser. So the week of September 1st, leading up to the Nebraska McNeese State game, they're going to raise awareness and funds for cystic fibrosis. So throughout the week, Single Barrel in Lincoln will offer meal specials, as well as the opportunity to bid a number of exclusive silent auction items on location. Then on Friday evening, that'd be the night before the game, There's going to be a reservation-only certified Piedmontese dinner by executive chef Brandon Harpster, featuring the previously mentioned silent auction. And guess who's going to be in town? Special guest Dave Remington. He's going to have stories to tell because he's at Burning Man right now. And he's He's at Burning Man. He's getting his freak on. Dave's getting his freak on at Burning Man.
You know he's taking photos.
He's taking photos all over the place, and I can't wait to see him. And he's too nice of a guy because I know he gets some really freaky, good-looking shots that he won't share on Facebook because they're not family-friendly. I just hope he brings them for us. So Dave's getting his freak on at Burning Man right now. And then on game day of McNeese State, Single Barrel has generously decided to donate 50% of their door proceeds to the foundation. That's a great cause.
It's a great cause, and that is hugely generous, a Single Barrel.
Okay, here's the deal. You know, it's hard to get excited about Florida Atlantic. It would have been a better storyline if Carl Pelini wouldn't have got fired at Florida Atlantic. They're a better team without Carl Pelini. I think that the record will show that. When he was fired last year, the team started winning. They got a new coach. But let's be honest. Nebraska has the longest streak in the nation of opening the seasons with wins at, what, 28? It's going to be 29. The only question is it a major ass kicking or is it a small ass kicking?
You know, I think Nebraska is going to beat these guys pretty solidly. I don't think it's going to be the utter blowout that people are expecting. And I think you go back and look at the past couple of years, teams have come into Memorial Stadium and have given people fits. I mean, you think about Wyoming. People are ready to kind of cash it in with some of these no-name teams that have come in the past few years and given Nebraska problems. And I think it's, you know, you've got a defense, and I think the big question is with Nebraska's defense, did Pelini, in fact, kind of tone things down just enough, simplify the scheme a little bit, kind of let the players do play to their athletic strengths and just go out and play as opposed to have to worrying about assignments and are these who's in the right position, etc. Because I think that's kind of screwed them up the last couple of years in these first couple of games of the season.
Who's the eye on more this year? Obviously, Bo Pelini is always going to have the eye on him. But is it a bigger year for John Papuchis or is it a bigger year for Tim Beck?
You know, I think it's both. I think both of them have some issues they've got to deal with. I don't think you can say one or the other. It'd be awfully nice to sort of simplify it that way. But on defense, you've got a group of athletes that you've got some lack of depth there. We've had the injuries. We've had the suspensions. We've had the guys transfer. But the talent's there. It's not as deep as you would have liked to have had it. I mean, you take away these preseason injuries and suspensions. You got a guy like Avery Moss who's not playing this year with the trouble he ran into last year. And the potential was there for this to be a very talented and a very deep defense, and they've lost that. But it's still a very talented defense, and they've got at least a couple of playmakers at every position group on the field. I mean, you look at a Zaire Anderson, a Day Santos at linebacker. You look at Vincent Valentine up front. You look at Randy Gregory. They've got defensive backs. I mean, it's not a bad team from a talent standpoint or a bad side of the ball from a talent standpoint. They are lacking depth. But if they can kind of avoid the injury bug during the season, this should be one of the more talented defenses, especially on the defensive front four, that Pelini's had to work with ever since he had Sue down there. And so I think the defense has some expectations to live up to as long as they can stay healthy. But I think you can say the same thing about the offense as well, too. You've got a group of guys that coming back from last season, it's a good group of ball players. It's a talented group of ball players. I think the coaching staff and the media a little bit have really kind of tried to play it up that Tommy Armstrong's the new starting quarterback, and he's this fresh face.
He's the second coming of Tommy Frazier.
He's this fresh face sophomore. You know what? The guy's got 8 starts under his belt.
But that's better than none.
No, I'm saying that on the flip side. I'm agreeing with you. Okay. I'm saying it, this isn't. This is a return. This is a legit returning starting quarterback. You got a guy like handing off to a guy like Ameer Abdullah. You've got experienced fullbacks. You got a couple of really good wide receivers. Again, the depth is lacking there a little bit, but you've got some good ball players, and you got some guys like Birch who are kind of those run across the middle, catch the ball, and know you're going to get demolished, and still he's going to go out there and do it every play. And you've got still a little bit of a hole at tight end, I think. The offensive line, it's a bunch of plugged holes from last year.
We only got one starter back.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by that, but it's guys that I think that across the board could be better than last year. So I think there's kind of a spotlight on both sides here. You've got a defense, very, very thin depth, very high talent. And it's failed to produce consistently early in the season in Pelini's tenure. And then on offense, same thing. You got some ball players. You got a ton of guys back from last year other than on the offensive line. But it's an offensive line that I like this offensive line better than I liked last year's. And I loved Spencer Long. You got a guy that's fighting for a starting job with the Redskins.
You shouldn't say that. You should only say Washington. You should never say Redskins. That's politically incorrect. You upset me that you just said that.
I can tell by the tears streaming down your cheek as you watch me toss some trash along the side of the road.
You don't like my sarcasm?
It's another team for the Giants to beat on, baby.
Ooh, there we go. There we go. Well, but can you win championships with no depth? Because I'm with you. I think the talent is the best we've seen in a while. But can you win championships with no depth?
It's going to remain to be seen. There's always kind of a little bit of that hidden depth because I think you look at Nebraska last year and no, they didn't win championships. I get that. But considering just the injury decimation that last year's Nebraska team had, that they were still able to go down to Florida and beat a Georgia team in the bowl game, I think is still pretty impressive. So you can still win. It's tough to win championships because I think about when I played down in Lincoln, you'd run through the top two quarterbacks and you still had, Matt, everybody still knows who Matt Turman is. I mean, the kid's a legend and he started two games.
Yeah, he handed the ball off to Lawrence Phillips.
But he did it looking good.
He did. Hand it to Lawrence and let you guys do the work
and
up front.
And he did it with a stellar nickname.
You wait, because later in September is the 20th anniversary celebration for you guys in 94. And they're going to have that in Miami game. You watch. Matt Turman will get like the largest applause on that game day. Matt Turman! Yeah!
I'm looking forward to it. I know they're having a reunion for it, so I'm always looking forward to see who comes back.
You know, Florida Atlantic is one thing that will be interesting to watch. They have an experienced quarterback back in Jaquez Johnson. He's a dual threat quarterback, Rob. He ran for 772 yards last year. He passed for 1,800 yards and 12 touchdowns. Nebraska has had trouble with dual threat quarterbacks.
Yeah, but I think everybody kind of has trouble with dual threat quarterbacks. I mean, name a team that does well against dual threat quarterbacks.
Okay.
That's kind of a loaded question.
It's really a loaded question, but let me say this. That seems to keep teams closer.
It does.
And within striking distance.
It does, and I think that's why so many teams have kind of gone to sort of a mixed pro-style system. Nobody does just a pure running attack anymore. Now, there's still the occasional Air Force run and wishbone and option, but you don't see anybody. You don't see the traditional running powers just running the ball. You don't see the traditional pro-style passing teams who do nothing but toss the long ball doing that anymore. Everybody's trying to do each of those well, and if you can, those are the teams that do well. And yeah, it's given Nebraska fits. They've kind of shown flashes of brilliance against some of those guys. Nebraska under Pelini kind of had Missouri's number there. I think there was one year Chase Daniel went off on him, but other than that, I think Nebraska did pretty well on the whole against a number of dual threat guys. But I mean, the dual threat guys are always going to give you, they're going to give you fits, but they give everybody fits. So it's kind of hard for me to look at that and say, yeah, this is going to be a problem.
Well, Florida Atlantic brings back basically their top players on offense, their top players on defense. But again, depth is going to be a problem. It's clearly, it's easy to see that Carl was building something there, but he couldn't coach. I mean, this team, after he got fired for doing whatever he was doing, I'm sorry, I was inhaling something there. You don't like my sense
that's
of humor
just,
tonight.
That's just cruel.
You don't like my sense of humor.
You know what
tonight.
I'm thinking about, though, is actually if you look at those losses they had last year, you know, they had a couple of pretty close ones.
They did, but after he got fired, they won four straight.
Which always helps. But those four straight that they won were not very good teams. I mean, they shellacked.
But you lose your freaking head coach.
They annihilated Tulane, but other than that, I mean, they had a
run. But you lose your head coach
teams.
And you rally to win. But now they bring in a new guy in Charlie Partridge, who's a Drake grad, was on the Iowa State staff for a little bit. But he's worked under Brett Bielema for some time. Was at Wisconsin with him.
He's at Arkansas.
He was at Arkansas with him, yeah. And so I think that he's got a good reputation. But he's not going to be playing with his players, and what kind of coach is he going to be?
He could be a bad coach, just like Carl Pelini was.
So you are saying that Carl Pelini was a bad coach?
It's hard for me to look at that situation and say, because like I said, I think his players were actually starting to play pretty darn well right before he did get fired. And I think he did a very good job developing players. I thought he did a good job recruiting. I mean,
he's a personable guy. He's a likable guy.
Second or third coach that Florida Atlantic's had. I mean, he had to basically try and turn around the absolute disaster that Howard Schnellenberger left down there, which I think other than a few seasons at Miami, Howard Schnellenberger's left disaster wherever he's going.
Well, 83 was a pretty good year.
That's what I said. I said other than a few years at Miami.
Yeah, he ruined Oklahoma too. Experience.
And I think with good reason.
Yeah, that was a bad year for OU.
I'm not sure he was sober most of the last 25 years.
He was drinking the Benson Brewery stunt double before the games.
I think it probably would have done him good if he had drank the Benson Brewery stunt double.
So I think the offensive game plan on Saturday should be pretty simplistic. Just run the damn football.
For Nebraska
yes.
or for Florida Atlantic?
For Nebraska. Run the damn football.
I agree. You know, the thing is, though, they've got guys who can catch the ball.
No, I know. But
and I think you've got to get used to catching. You got to get used to doing stuff in games. You can't go out and get a feel for your timing and get a feel for the offense as a whole by becoming too one-sided. Now, if it's one of these situations where, you know, the passing game's looking ugly and they got a run to win, fine, that's what you do. But if they can do what they want to do, put points on the board, enough points to win, and can get a number of players, I hate saying that you're going to use games as practice, but there's a point to it. And I think if Nebraska can go out and throw the ball okay, I think they got to do it.
Five captains named by Bo Pelini to start the week. Amir Abdullah, no surprise. Kenny Bell, no surprise. Jake Cotton is going to be a captain. So is Josh Mitchell and Corey Cooper. That's a pretty good group to be a captain. He's going with the seasoned captains. You know, when he first started, it was like
second year he's done this, yeah, so I believe.
Is that better? I mean, you've been on the field. Is it better to have season-long captains, or do you like game captains?
I'm a season captain kind of guy. I think it gives you continuity. I think it gives you somebody to look to. And I think it kind of puts a little bit of the onus on the captains themselves. Here's a group of guys that need to go out, and these guys need to represent the team. And, well, show that sense of direction for the team as a whole. And so I think it works both ways. It helps the guys who are the captains. It helps the team. I think when you're going with the game captains, it's kind of nice because everybody gets to slap team captain on their resume when they're applying for
jobs. They get to wear the C.
Exactly. I don't think I ever had a C on my jersey.
Were you a captain?
I was, senior year.
Who are the captains your senior year?
It's myself, Terry Keneally, Zach Wiegert, and Ed Stewart.
Pretty good captain group right there. That's a pretty solid group.
Not too bad. Three Nebraskans.
Now Tommy was never a captain, but he was a hell of a leader. And that's what I mean. I mean, who? I mean,
we had a team full of leaders. I mean,
you really did.
Yeah, I mean,
but
any given play.
But I mean, do you have to be a captain to be a leader? Or what is a captain?
No, but if
what is a captain's role?
Okay, here's a point I think that Bears making. Over the last several years, if you've looked at Nebraska teams, who have you looked at and said, hey, here's the point man for the team this year?
I haven't.
Yeah, last year, who would you have said it was?
I can't. I can't tell
you. Before that.
Can't.
It's, who do you think it's going to be this year?
I think it's going to be Abdullah. Abdullah is clearly, you know, just on his character, on his abilities. I mean, here's a guy that has a chance to be the all-time leading rusher in Nebraska history, right?
So, yeah, I agree. I think Abdullah's one. I think that speech he gave at Media Days.
And I think Kenny Bell
could be,
too.
Says a lot about him. Yeah, I think those guys do. I think you got some guys on the offensive line who, that's the one thing that honestly just kind of breaks my heart is you haven't looked at the offensive line and said, here's guys who have become defining team leaders. Now, I'm not saying that they haven't had good offensive linemen. I'm not saying they haven't had guys who had leadership qualities, who didn't show a ton of character, perseverance, and strength. I'm not saying that. But, I mean, you can give me a year from 20, 25 years ago, and I'll tell you who the offensive lineman was that basically just kind of controlled the trenches day in, day out in practice and during games.
Of course, Dr. Rob, you're going to be at the game this weekend,
right? You're not even trying. You're not even going to give me a year, are you?
I'm not going to give you a year.
Fine.
I lost my train of thought. I have a little ADD moment there, right?
Good Lord. Yes, I am going to the game
this
weekend.
You're going to be clear up in the north end zone, right?
Yeah.
That's where you sit.
Row 80. It's either 81 or 82. I keep forgetting.
So here's the deal. Dr. Rob's going to be tweeting from the game. I promise you he'll tweet some. I don't know how much. We want you to follow us on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. At Doc Talk Sports is the Twitter account. Now, Dr. Rob has his own Twitter account. That's at HH Rob. But we're going to try to switch everybody over from that. So I want you to tweet
Continuity.
We want continuity. So follow us at Doc Talk Sports. So Doc will be tweeting. I'll be tweeting a little bit. It's also where you can find the podcast when it first comes out. So make sure to follow us at Doc Talk Sports. I also want to thank our good friends at Husker Max who push this podcast out on each and every week as they help us get the word out and have been very good supporters of the podcast as well to make sure that everybody gets up to date on what Dr. Rob thinks. So as you go into this first game of the year, we both agree that it's going to be a win for Nebraska. What are you looking forward most to seeing? What do you want to see the most out of this Nebraska group?
I'd like to see clean defense. You don't want to see. I want to see assignment. I don't want to see assignment breakdowns, but I want to see that not coming necessarily from the fact that this is a highly polished group because it's not going to be game one. I want to see Papuchis and Pelini putting out there. That's a lot of P's right there. Alliteration with the letter P. I want to see those guys putting out there a basic simplified game plan, and I want to see them taking some of these ball players they have and just taking the leash off and letting them go. I want to see Randy Gregory running around in the backfield. I want to see Valentine just making a mess out of the middle. I want to see Zaire Anderson running sideline to sideline. I don't want these guys playing with a sense of hesitation, wondering what exactly their assignment is. That's what I want to see on defense. On offense, I'm looking forward to see how the offensive line looks. Like I said, I called it, it's a bunch of holes plugged from last year. I mean, it's just, you got all these guys that they've been in the system for a while, but I think they're really good. I truly do. I mean, I'm really, really excited to watch Alex Lewis play. This is a guy whose dad I watched when I was growing up, who was playing for the Raiders when I was down in Lincoln, and he'd come back and help
give
us coaching
points.
This
is the seventh year, right? This is Pelini's seventh year, right?
It is.
They should be good. I mean, sooner or later, you have to be good, right?
Yeah, you know what? One, it's... I buy into that a little bit because there's a learning curve to being a head coach, but at the same time, it's not like these players have been here for 7 years.
No, I know, but he had some misses recruiting-wise. He did. I mean, there was a couple of years there, not that great.
Everybody has those misses unless you're Alabama or Notre Dame.
Oh, come on. Notre Dame. Alabama, I'll give you Notre Dame.
Because, I mean, look at all the success Notre Dame has had with all of their stellar recruiting
That's
over
right.
the years.
That's right.
They're so good.
He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. He knows it all because he's smart. That's why. Big thanks to our good friends at the Remington Trophy for presenting the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Want to know more about the Remington Trophy? Go to remingtontrophy.com. You can get ticket information, sponsorship information, table information on the upcoming Remington Trophy presentation at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln coming up in January. It's a great event. We hope to see you there. He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for listening to this Husker Doc Talk podcast. We'll be back again next week to talk about the Husker win. Yes, they're going to win. And we'll also talk about the upcoming game.
Bold prediction there.
With McNeese State. Have a great week, everybody. And remember, game week. Game week. Game week.